Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dave Nurs. I'm the president of NPA Worldwide. We're a member-owned cooperative network of independent recruiters.
Dave, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Excited about this conversation. Want to learn a lot and more about the NPA Worldwide. But before we get into this, give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Sure. Thanks, John. It's great to be here. Appreciate the opportunity. I'm a sales and marketing I have a sales and marketing background. It happened to evolve into a general manager background at one point. And that's really kind of the thing that led me to NPA Worldwide. But I worked as a general manager for a parts division of a large office furniture manufacturing company, Steelcase. And then went on to some other things. Again, got recruited into every job that I've had, including my first job out of college. So I've had four jobs, and each time I was brought in by an independent recruiter, recruited me into the role. From a career standpoint, I am now the president of NPA Worldwide, have been that for about 16 years.
Well, that's super exciting and very diverse and exciting career you've had so far. Give us a rundown of what NPA Worldwide is all about. What are some of the key strategic initiatives you guys have going on, especially in this very interesting market that we're all experiencing these days?
Well, you know, everything, I think, changed in March of 2020, but we're a member-owned cooperative. We're a membership organization is probably the best way for you to think of what we do. You know, people tend to call us an association. We actually named ourselves an association at one point, but we're not truly an association. We're an operational network of peers. So the people who belong to NPA are the owners of NPA. So each member firm is an owner. We're cooperative is our structure. So from that standpoint, we're a taxable nonprofit organized in the state of Michigan. But some of our goals are as a cooperative are really about continuance and existence. It's not about profit. It's not about some tremendous advantage for us. It's about creating advantage for our members. And that's our reason to exist, is to exist tomorrow so that we can bring benefit to all of our member firms. And that's kind of makes a cooperative a unique beast in the world of corporations that exist nowadays.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting observation. And you've made a point with the market conditions just, you know, iterating and going in all different cycles, especially the last couple of years. It's been very interesting to observe how companies have adapted, you know, to these types of market conditions, which leads me to the further point I want to ask you around the different trends and you know, the research that you conduct on a continuous basis to keep yourself ahead of the curve in terms of where the markets are going. What are the different trends that you're excited about when it comes to talent acquisition, staffing, or, you know, recruiting in general?
Well, you know, some of these are not going to be super sexy, but they're pretty important. And the one that excites me the most is demographics. The reality is, in most of North America, most of Europe, there's some other places around the world where this may not be true, but in most cases, what's happening is demographics are such that there are more people in the process of exiting the workforce than are coming into the workforce. And based on pure demographics alone, there's a tremendous demand for talent search, for recruitment, one that I see that's not happening probably to the level that it should be happening around the world is development of individuals too. So demographics are such that there's no reason that recruitment shouldn't be a wildly successful endeavor for years into the future. There's no there's no point in time that you can see into the future that says there's not going to be a demand for more people than there are people to fill those roles. So that alone makes things exciting. But I would layer on top of that, you know, some of the doom and gloom that's been brought to the market over the years. I'd say that there's rarely a period in time where there's not been a prediction that, you know, oh, monster job board's going to come on and recruiters are going to go away. AI is coming in and robots are going to replace recruiters. The reality is it's predicted annually. It's predicted that recruitment will die, that it won't exist. And every year it gets more vital and more important. So it's really kind of fun to see how the recruitment industry and talent search continues to surge, even though people predict its demise on a constant basis. I'd say, yeah, there's some other things that are happening that really excite me. So one of them is this whole work from home or work from anywhere thing that's going on. It just changes the nature of search. It changes the ability to use different geographic areas to fulfill on job requirements that used to be off the table. They were not under consideration. You couldn't have somebody living and working in the Philippines, fulfilling on a customer service job in North America many years ago. There were companies that wouldn't consider, you know, somebody in Europe as an engineer on a project. You can do almost anything now in terms of work from home, work from anywhere, and hybrid jobs. So it's really adding a lot of excitement to what's going on. And then I guess the other thing I would put in there is technology. So for me, there's all sorts of technological advances that are pretty thrilling. And I mean, they go down to simple, goofy little things like, you know, Calendly for scheduling an appointment. And what, you know, how much better is that than the back and forth that used to happen through email forever and ever? I mean, I use Zoom a lot. I love their new backgrounds and features for like one-on-one conversations, some of the interactive things that they put in place. You know, you can have hybrid meetings where you have people sitting around a conference room and you can have people who are on Zoom meetings pumped in from other locations. And if you get the right kind of a camera in the meeting room where people are all sitting, it rotates around and it makes it seem like everybody's kind of in a Zoom meeting, which is, you know, makes those people who are remote feel more included. There's just all sorts of other technology tools that are pretty exciting too.
Yeah, that's definitely very exciting trends. And I like how you compartmentalize from, you know, from technology standpoint and what are the other things that, you know, recruiters are doing, how they have adapted to the current conditions, especially, you know, in a fully virtual environment. I would imagine that you guys collect and analyze a lot of data on how a lot of the, you know, recruiters, how they collaborate with each other and how they partner with hiring organizations. What are some of the insights that you can share with us when it comes to the recruiting companies or recruiters that are probably a little bit more successful than the others? What are some of the changes that they have implemented? What are some of the things that they have adopted as part of their processes in terms of being able to source, recruit, and, you know, just deploy workforce in a fully virtual environment?
Jan, I'll complicate your question a little bit by saying that it's not a recruiter standalone issue, the, you know, talent search. It's client and candidate. They should be locked arm in arm going after the candidates together. And if you get that kind of an approach, it actually improves results. So I'd say that's one of the primary things that successful recruiters are doing is they're getting some buy-in from their client companies. In some cases, that means that they're working on a retained basis as opposed to a contingent basis. In other cases, it means they're working contingent with some sort of a basic fee for work done. I mean, you don't go hire an accountant, have them run your taxes and say, hey, I'm not really happy with the way you ran my taxes, so I'm not going to pay you. But that happens in contingent recruitment. So those people who are getting some sort of engagement from their clients are more successful. I'd say the other thing is that, you know, and I'll talk about this again perhaps, but speed is really important. And you got to convince your client what the landscape looks like. So right now, you mentioned metrics and things that are going on. It is a candidate-driven market. The pendulum swings back and forth. And when, back in 2009, 2010, it became a job-driven market where if anybody had a job, everybody wanted it. Obviously, today's world is way different than that. And that is there's lots of jobs that are going unfilled. So as a recruiter, the ones that are being more successful are people who are using speed to their advantage. And that means don't waste time in our environment trying to go it alone. Enlist all your resources as quickly as you can. So that means if you have trading partners that you work with, let them know what the deal is like day one. Don't say, oh, I'm going to work it, you know, by myself for a month and see if I can find a candidate or two. No, the good candidates are going to be gone very quickly. So you need to use speed to your advantage as much as possible. And that means being inclusive of everybody that's going to help you in your search. I have like this whole list of things that can be done between employer and recruiter to be more successful. And a lot of them start with the employer, actually. So don't let top performers retire. I mean, figure out a way. Maybe people want more time off. Maybe people need more vacation. Maybe they want to work remotely consistently. Maybe they want to work 3 days a week versus 5 days a week. Don't let your top performers leave you. Figure out a way to keep them engaged with you. And if they are going to leave you, keep them on long enough that they can help coach, mentor people who are going to replace them. Don't let them walk out the door and then go figure out how I'm going to do a search to find somebody to replace them. That's crazy. I mean, that's just not a smart way to pursue your next person to fill an important or critical role. We find a lot of companies and employers and recruiters working together to build employers' brand reputations and things like Glassdoor and social media. We see some recruiters working with clients to do what we would consider continual search. So they target specific places where you would find talent that they would want, and they work it continually. It's not a one-off job search. It's a year-long, we are looking for people in this niche that do these things. We've seen some creative things come out of that, Jan. I mean, like people do, and this has been challenging with COVID. But pre-COVID, people would do topical dinners or topical lunches, and they would create a topic that would interest people who were in their wheelhouse in terms of people they'd want to recruit. They bring people in from the industry to kind of have a chat about a topic. It could be cybersecurity. It could be any other topic that's of interest to somebody who's in your niche that you're going after. And you get to know the people because you've met them, you've talked to them over multiple weeks and months, even years, before you actually have a need to make them a job offer. So it's creative. And it's a way of getting the talent that you would really want versus, you know, settling on somebody who just happens to tick many of the boxes when you're in desperate need.
Right. Absolutely. And I want to take that a little bit further. When it comes to interviewing, it's a very complex space. And a lot of the interviews are based on the past personal experience and, you know, sometimes an oversight on what are the strengths that are missing on our team versus let us not focus on some of the, you know, I guess, weaknesses that we can tolerate in that particular candidate. There's some of the fallacies that I've observed through the years of, you know, being on both sides of the equation as a hiring manager and also as a candidate myself. What are some of the your observations, your thoughts, you know, when it comes to improving just the overall interview experience for the both sides, you know, managing those expectations? What are some of the strategies that you think are useful? Some maybe best practices that you guys like to share with your members? Talk a little bit further about the interview aspect.
Interviewing is, and that's why I like some of these things where you can get to know people over a longer period of time are advantageous. Not everybody is a good interviewer. They might be a wonderful candidate. They might have wonderful skills, but they are not just good interviewers. there's things you can do with candidates. And we have one that we direct people to a provider. It's actually called interviewmastery.com. And that's where a candidate can learn, you know, just basics. Like, for instance, if you're going to do a video interview, how do you set up the room in order to give yourself the best chance of coming off effectively? How do you prepare for the questions that are going to come your way? And I'd say candidates need to be tuned into what behavioral interviewing is all about. I'm a big proponent of employers using behavioral-based interviewing. So this is where you're looking for examples of things that people have done, as opposed to theoretical answers about what they might do given a scenario. And I have had some personal experiences with it, where I started behavioral interviewing. This has got to be 15, 20 years ago. I did a behavioral interview, and I had a candidate. They couldn't answer the questions. And the reason they couldn't answer the questions is because they wanted to be very abstract about everything, and they didn't want to be practical. And I think it's important that both the candidate and the interviewer make the situation comfortable, but get to the point where you talk about real examples of things that have happened, as opposed to theoretical types of things that maybe they would like to do given the chance or opportunity to perform that way. And the other thing I like to see is, from a best practice, is that if there should be multiple interviews being done, the interviewer should be scripted, and scripting prevents things like illegal questions being asked, or, you know, off-target questions, or poor use of time where you spend 20 minutes talking about something that's not job related. So I think it should be scripted. And then I think the interviewers, and there typically should be two or more, the interviewers should get back together immediately, as quickly as possible after the interview, and compare notes in a numerical way. I mean, it shouldn't be, well, I kind of like them. It should be, I scored this person a 4 out of 5 in this question. I scored this person a 2 out of 5 in this question. And there should be some comparison and debate between the interviewers as to why they see them that way. Because I think nobody has a really clear vision of the success of a candidate in an hour-long interview or a 45-minute interview. You need help, and you ought to be helping one another get to that conclusion. So from best practice, do behavioral-based interview, send your candidates off to coaching so that they can perform as well as possible, and make sure you're getting together as quickly thereafter as possible on the interview.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting area that we could probably spend the rest of the podcast talking about, this because it's so complex, and, you know, there's so many different moving parts to this. So definitely very interesting observations. We've seen tremendous growth in just when we talk about future of work, and we drill that a little bit deeper into the growth of contingent workforce with organizations seeking various ways to be able to scale up or down in a more efficient manner. Tell us a little bit more about some of the strategies that you observe companies deploy when it comes to utilizing contingent workforce, freelance, gig workers, when it comes to being able to scale in all different directions, the expansion into different markets. How does that impact just the recruiting process in general? Share some thoughts from that standpoint with us.
Yeah, I think it becomes kind of a specialized opportunity in a lot of cases. And for instance, I mean, a lot of companies, the job that they're hiring you for isn't going to be fillable by a gig worker or an assigned project team. But there are a lot of things that happen within organizations that require really a dramatic effort in a short amount of time or a relatively defined period of time that should be addressed more by project teams. And I'd like to see more of this than what I've seen to this point. But I think at some point in the future, we're going to see more teams aligned around, for instance, product launch. I worked for an office furniture company for a while, and, you know, we would actually have a team of engineers, marketing people work together on a launch of a fabric or a finish or some sort of a product line. And after they were done, they went right into the next one because we were a big company churning a lot of things out. But not every company is of that size. And they need to be able to go someplace and find people who really have expertise in developing product, launching product, marketing product, services, whatever it happens to be. And I think that the recruitment industry, and this would be like staffing companies in particular, can start to organize around that if they're clever and they figure out how to do that. One of the things that we've seen from a few of our member organizations is that they've started to work on retiring or retired executives. So there are needs for companies to have leadership brought in to start new divisions, start new opportunities, to fill in for somebody who's exited unaccounted, you know, in a unexpected way. And there are companies that are actually working to fill that space with people who would go into temporary type assignments. And they might be a duration of anywhere from 6 months to a couple years based on that. So I think there's going to be a lot more of that. But it's a little daunting, I think, for a recruitment company or a staffing organization to build talent, to keep them employed and satisfied year after year, unless you're really good and you really know your niche very well. So it's kind of like a lot of times it's not hard to find, a temporary service for something like bartending, but it's not as easy to find temporary service for something like product development. But it will be, I think, in the future. I'm just not sure how quick that'll happen.
Right, absolutely. That's definitely very interesting. And as you guys, you've seen the market go in all different directions and iterations. The need to continuously innovate, I would imagine that's at the forefront for you and your organization. Talk a little bit further when it comes to building and fostering that culture of innovation. How do you guys go about, you know, improving your services or, you know, your technology or anything that really makes your members successful? Just talk a little bit more from that innovation standpoint.
Again, it's a joint effort between recruiter and employer. And I think the good news is that our members are in a better situation with employers being open-minded than they ever have been in the past. Because I think in a lot of cases, you know, companies want to do what they've always done. And, you know, as a recruiter, you may be bringing new ideas to them and they don't want to buy into the new ideas because they've always done it a certain way. So I think the conditions are ripe for innovation. And again, I'd go back to things like continual search, where, you know, if you have, 30 electrical engineers in your organization, why would you ever go dead in terms of looking for electrical engineers? You should have a constant search going on for that. And we found that some people have been able to work with employers, and some of it's a scale issue too, Jan. I mean, if you're a five-person organization, it's hard to be involved in a continual search effort. But if you're a 500-person organization, it makes it much more viable opportunity. So innovation around timing is very important. I'd say one of the things that our members are working with their employers on is improved innovation around onboarding. Onboarding is what will allow somebody who has taken and accepted a new job opportunity, it will allow them to remain there over a longer period of time. Poor onboarding will lead to an early exit. And innovation in this area really needs to occur. And, it's not maybe as much innovation as good consistency and best practices need to be applied. But there's no reason a new candidate, somebody who's been hired into your company, shouldn't be getting regular contact from multiple whether you call them mentors, coaches, peers, supervisors, they should be getting contact from multiple people. At the end of each week, there should be a recap as to how they're doing, what they've done. There should be assignments put forward to those people to see if they're able to achieve them on their own, or if they need significant support in order to get things done. There need to be check-ins on a monthly basis that are more demanding than the weekly check-in that you do. So innovation around keeping people engaged and happy and trained and educated and supported are really important. We're also seeing some people innovate as it relates to technologically oriented positions where they're doing skill-based testing. So if you're hiring people who are going to work C++ or some other type of coding function, you need to test them. And they need to be tested in a documentable kind of a way. And that's a really important thing, because you don't want to find out 3 months in that somebody didn't really know what you would have expected them to know on the way in. Another area I'm starting to see more innovation is that companies are beginning to measure and monitor their success. And that means things like they measure time to hire, they measure their retention rates. These are important things to understand. For instance, like retention rates, if you can see where retention, where fall offs, as we call them in the industry, are happening, what's driving those? Is it a singular division? Is it a singular manager that's causing a lot of these things to happen? If you can figure out what's causing turnover, whether it be internal people or people who don't stick after you hire them, you need to address it pretty upfront. So get innovative and make sure that you're not losing the investment that you've made in both existing people and new hires.
From your personal perspective, in terms of the content diet or the sources that you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself educated, informed on your industry or anything outside of that, share with us those sources that that really help you stay informed.
I would say during the pandemic that I've been more of a like fiction reader than a business book reader. And that's kind of an unusual turn for me. But I think the fact that work is always there, whether it be home or office, has caused me to need more breaks in fictional stuff. But I do subscribe to a service called The Business Source. I think it's thebusinesssource.org. And they send me on a monthly basis two books that come in via a video or a PDF. You can kind of go through, it's kind of like one of those explainer videos that they go through, and they go through the high points of each book that they're putting forward to you. And if the stuff is really dead on for what you need, I go out and I'll buy the book. I've go through probably at least two of those a month. And then lately, a lot of my business reading has shifted from generic, you know, business type books to very specific legal newsletters. And the reason being, in this industry, it's really changed a lot, I would say, in the last 5 years. The pandemic has had some impact, because there's all sorts of rules about what you can and can't do in terms of, you know, face-to-face meetings or requirements for vaccinations or, whatever it happens to be. But the other thing is, there's every municipality, state, city is starting to come up with their own legal regulations as it relates to things like background checks. Or like New York City has some background check rules, or there's some other rules like salary history. And salary history is a moving target. Every city, municipality has a different rule. I mean, you can use it, you can't use it. Some, I think the state of Michigan has actually forbidden a law that would prevent you from not allowing the ability to ask about salary history, whereas some other communities have said you absolutely cannot use salary history in your consideration for job offers. So the legal newsletters are becoming a large part of my business reading based on the changes to the recruitment trade.
Right, absolutely. Those are definitely great, great insights. Thank you for sharing that. And David, last but not least, in terms of a career advice that, or maybe several, you know, pieces of advice that you had received throughout, you know, your career that you continue to, you know, to go back to and actually use that to mentor and, you know, advise others in your circles. Share some of those recommendations and career advice that you really find valuable.
Boy, I mean, some of this stuff is pretty simple and straightforward, but, you know, the old listen before you speak stuff is, I think, important. And, you know, I think that understanding other people's point of view or motivation in some cases, you know, kind of what's in it for them has often been pointed out to me as a critical requirement for relating to other people and making sure you make good decisions. You know, it's almost like a lot of the stuff I think that is most important is the stuff that you learned at a kindergarten level. So it's the, you know, treat others as you'd like to be treated, you know, listen before you speak, take your time with important things. You know, it's pretty basic stuff. I don't think there's any real magic to it. I think it's just good common sense in a lot of cases is what's required. And, you know, I think persistency is a really important quality for leadership and for success. And I think I get a lot of that from a sales background where, I mean, if you really think about it, people don't like just walk in and say, here's an order for this. I mean, you have to meet somebody, talk to somebody, engage somebody, present something to somebody 7, 8, 10 times before it goes from they know who you are to they're willing to acquire whatever it is that you're selling. So I'd say persistency is really important. And I'd say we're going to be challenged in the years ahead because of the instantaneous feedback and nature of our world and the kids that are growing up in our world. Now I'm the get off my grass old time guy. But I think, you know, we really are going to have a challenge because people are used to instant gratification. And I'd say that most things that are worthwhile take time. And you got to figure out how to get people motivated to invest the time to get to those great successes. And it's going to be harder as the days go by. So I'd say look for people who are persistent. You need to be surrounded by them.
Great recommendations. And I definitely appreciate that, David. And overall, thank you for your time today. It was a very short and insightful conversation. You were very generous with some of the information that you had shared. Just like with all the podcasts, you know, guests that I host, I love doing a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see if everything that we've discussed still makes sense, still applies. And I definitely look forward to doing that with you as well. Thank you.
There you go. Persistency and consistency. Stay on it.
That's right. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Jan. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.